You're listening to a stage talk titled Tracing a Drug Cartel. This week, we were joined by the Sunday Times crime, terrorism and national security reporter, John Mooney, and Bellingcat's financial researcher, Connor Plunkett. They spoke about the considerations you need to make when reporting on big-scale crime operations and how they found a hidden side to one of Ireland's most notorious cartel bosses. This talk was hosted by me, Charlotte Marr, on Thursday the 24th of April, 2025, in the Bellingcat Discord server. Hi all, thanks so much for coming. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm going to turn on my camera quickly. We're currently just waiting for John to jump in. But in the meantime, I just wanted to introduce Connor and the subject of our talk today. So welcome to this week's Stage Talk. When you think of crime reporting, you might be picturing undercover reporters, dodgy former criminals as sources, and an unlucky journalist doggedly following the death and destruction that's often left behind in a major criminal's wake. But can you report on criminal groups without any of these old tropes? What does reporting on cartels look like when you're only using what you can find on the internet? What traces do these groups leave? Well, today's speakers will hopefully enlighten us a little on this subject. We're joined by my colleague, Bellingcat's Connor Plunkett, and hopefully in a couple of minutes, we'll also be joined by the Sunday Times' John Mooney. Both have worked together following the Kinahan cartel and the suspected associates. The Kinahan cartel are a criminal gang that is suspected to have amassed profits of over $1 billion through the trade of illegal narcotics, arms trafficking, and money laundering over the years. As I pass over to Connor and hopefully later John to tell us more, a short reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please do so in the chat as we talk. You can see it, the little speech bubble in the corner of your screen. And please note that this is being audio recorded. So if you do not want me to read out your Discord username, please note that within your question so I avoid doing that. Okay, Connor, I will pass over to you in the meantime to tell us a little bit more about the work that you've been up to.
Thanks very much, Charlie. I just want to say I'm delighted to be here. Before I was working at Bellingcat, I was an occasional poster on the Discord myself. I definitely learned a lot from the Discord community, so it's a privilege to be here talking to you all today. I'm a bit nervous, but it's great to be here. So anyway, I just thought I'd start by just giving you a little bit of background on the Kinahan cartel and who Christy Kinahan is, just for people who maybe aren't as familiar. The Kinahan cartel, they're a major Irish transnational organized crime group. It was founded by Christy Kinahan in the 90s. So he's in his mid-60s now, I believe. And it's now run from Dubai by Christy and his two sons, Daniel and Christopher Jr. So in 2022, Christy and his two sons were sanctioned by the US government. And the government put a combined $15 million price for information leading to their arrest or financial disruption. So yeah, ever since then, you know, they've kind of gone to ground in a lot of ways. Because previously to that, Christy's son, Daniel, was involved pretty big time in the professional boxing world. So anyone who's into boxing might have heard of MTK Global. And I see John's here now. So I was originally going to let John talk about the Kinahan's background because he's been covering this for decades. So I might pass it over to him now, John. John, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Connor.
Okay, brilliant. Great to have you here. Yeah, so I just was going to pass it over to you just to explain a little bit on the background of the Kinahan's.
So thanks very much to Bellingcat for offering me the opportunity to speak about this. I feel very old when Connor says that I've been reporting on these for decades. Unfortunately, it has been decades, but I'll give everyone a quick synopsis of this particular organized crime group. So Christopher Kinahan is a very intelligent and highly entrepreneurial drug dealer who emerged from the Irish underworld in the early 1980s. And he came from a middle-class background. He'd be a relatively well-educated man. And he would be also highly intelligent. And these are character traits that became very obvious to anyone who encountered him back then. So he started out his criminal career involved in fraud and quickly moved into drug trafficking. In the course of the following decade, he became a very significant drug dealer in the Dublin area and was imprisoned on two separate occasions, one for a type of very sophisticated fraud and the other one for drug dealing. On his release from prison in the early 90s, he was a man who had used his time in prison well. He'd studied, he had obtained a degree and actually declined to leave prison early, although when he was nearing the completion of his sentence, on the basis that he wanted to finish his studies. He then became what could be best described as a criminal drug trafficker par excellence, insofar that he started making connections with big drug trafficking syndicates from around the world. He travelled extensively across Europe. He travelled into Central Asia, into the Americas as well, and forged connections with cartels, criminals across Europe, and he became a logistics expert. In the process of all of this, he also became a multi-millionaire. He became a man that it now has amassed a fortune put in the region of 1.5 billion. So he is the figurehead of this criminal organization. Its tentacles now stretch across the world. He is very unusual in the criminal underworld insofar that they're not just drug traffickers anymore. They really are. They're experts at moving product across the world. But they also have forged connections in with hostile states like Iran and Russia. And indeed, he is very much involved with intelligence services that would be involved in nefarious activities across Europe. So the cartel is many things to many men. It's a very organized or kind of structure, hierarchical structure. He's been joined by his two sons, which is Christopher Jr. and Daniel Kinahan. They have many different types of businesses. Some of these are legitimate and some of these are criminal in nature. And they are amongst now the top drug traffickers in the world. If you speak to an academic, they may describe them as a hybrid organization. They have the character traits of a terrorist group, but they have the outlook of criminals. They're also involved in legitimate industry. So their fingers in many, many pies. They are wanted men by various governments across the world, but they live very openly in Dubai, and so do their families and their extended network of associates. So these are not commoner garden criminals. They are venture capitalists in the international underworld.
Thanks for that, John. Yeah, so... So now I'm just kind of going to go into the collaboration Bellingcat has done with John over at the Sunday Times starting last year. So I'll just share my screen here. Just one second. Yeah, so basically it started last year with the joint investigation we did on Christy Kinahan's Google reviews. So basically how this started was... It had been reported that Kinahan had been posting online for some reason under an alias, Christopher Vincent, which are his first and middle names. So not the most genius alias ever. But this had been reported by the Sunday World that he had a LinkedIn profile and a couple of Twitter profiles that he'd been posting under, and one of which had a picture of his face on it. So they had come across this. And this was the first time in 2022 that... It had come out there that he'd been using this alias online. And then from that, it was part of, like, I was just thinking to myself, maybe this has been used in other places. You know, I was a member of the Discord server. I was into doing open source stuff. So I used to just do this kind of stuff in my free time. But I was just doing some Google searches with that alias. I was trying different keywords, and one of them was Sharjah, which is a city next to Dubai in the UAE. And my idea there was that it could be a region they're also active in, but less publicized. So, like, if you search Christopher Vincent and Dubai in quotes, you're just going to get loads of news articles about the Kenyans. But if you search Sharjah, you might find something that's gone under the radar, and also it effectively filters out all those news reports. So on the first page of results here, I saw one snippet of a Google review, which was on this third-party website with the name Christopher Vincent. We can see it here. For those listening, it's just a little screenshot of this Google review of a steak restaurant. And you could click through to the Google profile from that review. And you could see that it had posted over 100 reviews, over 1,000 photos. And you could see all the places around the world that had that he had left reviews. So in the south of Africa, Europe, Asia, Middle East. And so at this point, you know, it could easily be just a coincidence. I mean, it's just the same name. You know, who knows? That's what I was thinking at this point. It's probably a coincidence. And then I was just scrolling down through the reviews to see what he was talking about. And there was one review that jumped out at me because I remembered from a report from the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. They had said that Christie had gone to an aviation conference at a hotel in Egypt in 2019. And in one of these reviews, this Christopher Vincent Google reviewer had explicitly said, "I was here at this same hotel as reported by the ICAJ for the Global Humanitarian Aviation Conference." So this is the very same conference that Christie Kinnane was pictured at. So that's when I sat up and go, "Oh God, this has to be him." So then that's essentially when we got involved with Bellingcat and we started this collaboration with John at the Sunday Times. We just dove into this profile and we tried to get every detail we could out of it. So as I said, there was over 1,000 photos. So one of the first things we wanted to do was go through all those photos and see what we could find in them, because in a lot of these reviews he mentions business meetings and things like that. So we were curious to see if we could spot any of the people he's potentially with, or even see a reflection of the man himself, just to further corroborate that this is the actual same guy. So there were a few reflections in the picture he took on this people who are watching the stream. There's one where he's in a hotel in Spain and he's taking a picture of the bathroom for some reason. And you could see in the corner, there's a mirror and you could see just half of his face there. And another one, at the end of a hall, there's a mirror. You can see him in the reflection again. And I think this one is the key one really, where you can kind of see his face. It's kind of faint on the picture, but if you look closely, you can see it's really him. So they were the first key things that we found, those reflections that were corroborating this was his account once again. So then another thing we wanted to do was go through the social media of these places he'd been visiting to see if anyone else had taken pictures on the same day he was there, to maybe see again who he'd been meeting. And we didn't really have much luck with that, except for this one restaurant in Dubai. This is one of the last places he reviewed on his profile in March 2023. And so he said the food was good. I'm definitely going to come back. And then apparently he did, because a couple of months later, the restaurant itself posted a picture onto its own social media. And in the background, you could see Christie talking to his son, Christopher Kinnane Jr. And I believe this is the first picture Christopher Jr. that had come out since maybe 2016. So yeah, he was meeting with him on that day for whatever reason. And at this point, both of them were sanctioned by the US government and they had a $5 million reward on their heads. So yeah. And then just to further verify as much as possible that this Google account was his, we thought it was important to somehow connect the email address behind that account to this Google review profile. And there's no way you can do that just from the profile itself. It's not public information. But if you already have the email address, there are ways to find the Google review account connected to that address. So what we tried to do was find any possible address that was connected to Christopher Kinnane, Christopher Vincent under his alias, and see if they were attached to any review profiles. And the way we did this was by going through his social media and all these websites he'd set up under his alias, Christopher Vincent, and finding any email address we could that we could then link to a potential Google review account. And there was one email address hidden in the source code of this particular website, ChristopherVincent.com. And we could run that through a tool called GHunt, which is an open source tool to find if a specific Gmail address is linked to a Google review account. There's other tools you can use for this, like Epios. But this one I like to use because it's open source. So that's what we did here. This Gmail address we found in the source code, put it through GHunt, and we found that it was connected to the Google review account. So then we had his Gmail address. So then another thing we could do with that was search it through Whois records, which are basically website ownership records. And there are some tools you can use online to search for email addresses or specific keywords in Whois records to see if they've ever been attached to a website that was registered. And this Gmail address that we found was indeed attached to one website that was registered in 2013. And we found in the Whois details, the registrant name was Christopher Vincent Kinahan. And the address was an address in Spain, which was also listed in the sanctions from the United States. So that was kind of solidifying that link through open sources to this Google account, just to make sure that we covered every avenue to make sure that this was actually his account. So yeah, that was basically it. Just the main resources we used during this was OutScraper. That's a service you can use to scrape Google reviews and get them into spreadsheet form, which was just incredibly useful for us. It's premium usually, but there's a free tier that you can use. Also some Python scripts that were used for scraping too. I'm terrible at coding, but I use ChatGPT for that. And then for the Whois record searches, I used Whois XML API and then GHunt, of course. And so that was the first investigation we did last year. And then just last month, we did another collaboration with Bellingcat and the Sunday Times. So this was on a German businessman called Oliver Herman. So he had managed to get himself arrested in Australia just at the end of last year. Him and another guy were arrested in a hotel in Perth, and they found 200 kilograms of cocaine in their hotel rooms, along with night vision goggles and aviation equipment. And according to police, what happened was this guy, Oliver, had gone to a remote airstrip about 7 hours drive from Perth. The next day he came back and he was arrested with his companion with all the cocaine. So that was reported in the media in Australia. And this guy, Oliver, he had kind of come on our radar last year around the time of the Kinahan investigation, but it never really went anywhere. But then when the media reported about this in January in Australia, we kind of took notice. And then John over at the Times, he did an article on this as well in January, talking about his alleged links to the Kinahan cartel and that he had close financial ties to Christy Kinahan. So after that, what we wanted to do in our companion piece with Sunday Times and Bellingcat was just map out his online footprint, the companies he's involved with, and see if there's anything open source out there that lines up with anything related to the Canadian cartel. So yeah, a key thing with that was his Strava profile, Oliver Herman's Strava profile. So he's an avid runner. He won the Munich Marathon in 2016, and we were able to find his Strava profile. This is my colleague Peter Barth found this actually. And he even logged his Munich Marathon winning run on Strava, and we were able to confirm it was his because there was pictures of him on it. And over a 10-year period, he had logged like 5,000 runs all over the world, like in Europe, in South of Africa, Asia, lots of them in Dublin as well, because he was involved in an Irish company called Leverus. And so what we did was we mapped out all his runs on a custom Google map. And then we also put Christy Kinahan's Google review points on the same map. So we could basically see at a glance if any of these places lined up So that's what we probably did to start with, and found a couple of places that did. So this is one example. In 2019, Christy Kinnan said in a Google review that he had went to a business conference in Harare on a specific date. And just the day before this conference was happening, Herman was he logged the Strava run just 5 kilometers away. So like he's in the same vicinity as Kinnan at this point. Another one was in Dubai. He logged a run just that started and ended outside this specific hotel. And just a few days later, Daniel Kinnan was pictured in a tweet at the exact same hotel. But we were able to geolocate this picture that was posted on social media of Daniel Kinnan meeting someone else and show that it was the same hotel where Herman's run started and ended. So again, just two different things in different countries lining up. And we were also able to identify his domestic partner through her Strava. We could see that their runs overlapped over multiple years, and she was herself was also involved in a series of companies. One of these was 247 Capital Group. This is a South African company. And then we could check. On the website of this company, one of the addresses, the office addresses, was for this building in Johannesburg. And bringing back in the Google reviews once again, Christy Kinnan had reviewed this specific building and he'd taken multiple pictures inside. And Herman also had logged a couple of runs starting and ending at this building. And so this is one of the pictures here for those of you who are in the audience right now. This is one of the pictures that Kinnan posted on this specific Google review. You can see in the reflection, he's in a floor of the building that's still in construction. And it looks like he's a reflection. You can see, it looks like he's with a couple of other people as well. And then apart from that, I won't get too much into the weeds, but we did some IP address tracking between this South African company, 247 Capital, and two other companies, one of them based in the United States, another one based in Indonesia. And it turned out that this company, Riba LLC, that was on the same IP address, John Mooney over the Times, they reported that this was actually the same company that received a payment for a Kinnan-linked transaction. So again, we're just finding open source things that are lining up with other reports. And then this is just a diagram showing the links between the websites and how we are kind of corroborated that it wasn't some kind of coincidence. Because if you find websites on the same IP address, it doesn't necessarily mean they're linked. But what we thought was important that you just need to find that other data point that links them together. So we were able to do that through addresses on the websites and that were linked with other addresses on the different websites. Again, I won't get into the weeds with that. The last thing was this third company that was on the same IP address. We found it listed on FAA records for an aircraft that was exported from the United States to Harare just last year, and it's been pretty active in the region since then, flying to a lot of minor airports in South Africa. I think it's been complete radio silence since our articles come out, but yeah. So that's basically it. Just to end on, like, with an investigation like this, there's a lot of, it's kind of hard to describe coherently because there's a lot of levels to it. You know, there's kind of middlemen, there's addresses and IP addresses, and it's probably by design. But so to keep track of this in investigation, I think it's good to use visualizations, and that's what we did with this. So the whole time we were doing this, we were using OCCRP's Aleph. It's a tool that allows you to make network visualizations. Unfortunately, it's only available for journalists, but there are other tools you can use, like Draw.io or Obsidian. But it's just good to do that, to keep track of everything, because it's like when you see it written down, it's just like a wall of text. And so, that's it. Unless John has anything else to add, take some questions.
Yeah, I think it's really important like that. But certainly my experience of the collaboration with Bellingcat is that I'm involved in a certain type of work. So I deal with a lot of people passing me information that are not permitted to do so. We deal with a lot of people with information who pass it on. And with the Oliver Herman story, it was really interesting. He was identified to me a number of years ago as someone who was potentially linked in to this type of activity with Kinahan. And in our job, we have to be extraordinarily careful because people involved in crime meet people that aren't involved in crime. And you have to be very careful to assess what you're being told, to consider it and be very contemplative about it. Because sometimes people don't know who they're dealing with. They might know who they're dealing with, but they're not necessarily involved themselves. And there can be a multitude of reasons why people don't distance themselves from people like Christopher Kinahan. So we began after Oliver Herman was identified, we took the best approach, which is to do nothing, to examine him, look at him and take deep dives into this guy to see who he was. And the real point in doing an investigation is not just to prove someone's involvement in something, but it can also be to disprove their involvement or knowledge of certain events. So we looked at this guy. There's a team of us. It's about four people. Three of those people are Bellingcat and then there's me. And we just sat it out. And I think it was about Christmas time last year that the name Oliver Herman pinged from Australia. And the Australian Federal Police were describing this individual as a South African national. And I remember hearing this, and it was, he the details matched the guy that we were interested in, and there was a bit of discussion amongst ourselves. We eventually had to get someone to walk into an arraignment hearing to make sure it was our guy. And I think at that stage, when we started making more inquiries, the Australian Federal Police discovered that this man that they had in custody, who is, it should be stated, only facing charges, he hasn't been found guilty of anything, was actually a Swiss-German national and he wasn't South African. And we took it from there. But the real reason why I tell that story is that the real beauty of the collaboration is using every conceivable type of investigative method, such as old-fashioned intelligence collection by, you know, investigative journalists, with open source investigation and analysis with the guys from Bellingcat. And certainly it's been my experience that that system and that way of going about things, it's a pretty lethal and effective technique when it gets going. I always kind of think of some of the guys from Bellingcat as being like, a bit like piranhas, that when they scent blood, it's like they'll really get down to the bones of everything and they do a really, really fine job. And if I could take this opportunity to yet again thank the team from Bellingcat for this collaboration, but it really has been phenomenal from my point of view and the way we collaborate and the way we work against each other and help each other and that kind of thing. It really is fantastic, but it is really also effective, and it can really produce startling results. Like, I mean, I can't really overstate the security precautions that the Kinahan cartel use, and yet Connor, with his pesky mind, was able to uncover this treasure trove of information about Christy Kinahan, which completely startled everyone, including, should I say, various elements of international policing who hadn't noticed this or they hadn't found it, and whatever. So it's been really, really effective, and it's made the cartel itself pause for thought in terms of the way they behave and their own infosec security and that kind of thing, and also the trail of evidence they've led behind, because all sorts of people have popped up in this. And I'm sure Connor won't mind me saying that that project is still running, and we have meetings every so often about this, and we chase down different leads and run down clues, etc. And that is continuing to produce quite startling results, which I hope at some day we'll be able to publish more about.
Amazing. Thank you so much, both of you, for talking about the investigations. And John, you actually touched on something I wanted to ask you about before we go to questions from the audience. I wanted to ask, because a lot of our community here are also interested in doing investigations themselves. How do you prepare to report on such a prolific criminal group like this? Kind of what precautions have you both taken? And what needs to be put into place when you start looking into criminal groups like this?
So I think digitally, it's not so much a problem unless they detect that someone's looking at them. So obviously, if you're onto a social media account and you're looking at it continuously, algorithms can kind of disclose your interest in them if your own profile starts popping up. And it's my experience is that when people see things like that, they become a little bit more wary. Dealing with people involved in this in, I suppose, real life and going out and meeting them. I've had problems in the past. I haven't had problems with this particular investigation. But I always kind of tell people when they're dealing with this, with these kind of matters, to kind of act professionally, never get personal, never ever get personal. Always treat people with respect. I think if, you know, I don't believe in, for example, you know, this kind of confronting people or something like that, that never type kinds of works. So I've always kind of taken a very pragmatic and just really open and transparent approach when we're looking at someone. It should be stated, by the time it gets to the stage where we're approaching someone for comment, and indeed on these stories, we already know the answers to everything we're asking. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about investigative journalism and that kind of thing. I think that really when you're getting into the stage where you're seeking comment, you know, I'm always delighted to be able to approach solicitors. I'm always very polite. I always give people a lot of time to respond and engage with them. And, you know, I've, like, my own work is focused on organized crime, terrorism and national security threat actors. And I, you know, you certainly will draw attention on yourself insofar as, particularly if it's a state actor, they have the ability to look at what you're doing in a way that other people can't. Some criminal groups can do, but I always think the best way of handling these things is really in an open and transparent way. And it should be stated that the team that looked at the Kinnan cartel for these investigations, we always operated in a way that would pass muster if anyone lodged a legal complaint or complained about anything we wrote, insofar as that even the Kinahans, who are some of the most wanted people on the face of the planet, we went through enormous lengths to try to communicate with them, to give them an opportunity to respond to what we were saying, and went to great lengths to do that. Just in case there was something wrong or we were had made an error or something like that. And that's a principle that if you stick to it, regardless of deadlines and everything else, it will serve you well in the long run.
Absolutely. Right of replies are more important than just giving the person opportunity to respond. It's also saving your own back as well a little bit. I wanted to ask some of the audience questions, and I'm going to combine the two of them because one's quite short. Primal Collective asks, how long did all of this research take? And then Connor, maybe you could answer Peekaboodle's 101's question, which is, how do you both go about linking up together to work on this? Is it a case of reaching out to see if the Times are interested in joining, or what kind of steps are involved in the collaboration? So first, how long did all the research take? And two, how did you end up collaborating?
Yeah, so it took months. If we're talking about, yeah, each of the investigations took months, especially the Kinnan reviews. So initially, when I found the review profile, I spent a good bit of time trying to verify it myself. And then when I approached Bellingcat, at that point, I think it was about maybe 6 months or 5 or 6 months from that point until it was eventually published. So yeah, it was months and months of work into this. And same with the more recent one, it was also months. Yeah. So we put a lot of effort into just trying to make sure there's no stone unturned. Was there another question? I've forgotten.
How do we meet up and how do we arrange this?
Sorry. Yeah. So like originally how it worked was I kind of pitched this to I was just like freelance at the time. I just pitched this to Bellingcat, and then they reached out to John over at the Times, because just to have someone with the incredible experience John does to work with this on us, because I think Bellingcat hadn't really done that much recent stuff on cartels in general, so they just wanted to have like a veteran in with us to work on the project together. So yeah, I believe that's how it started.
There's Connor calling me a veteran again. I feel very uneasy with this.
Sorry, John. Sorry, Rachel.
You're an expert. That's what you are. You're an expert. Don't worry. We've got another few questions coming through. Scoot asked, what first led you to the LinkedIn profile for Christopher Vincent? Did you have some hunch he was going by that name and thought you'd poke around? What kind of gave you that?
That was a report that was in the news, so that had already been found, that was out there. And just, you know, I'm Irish myself, so I know of the Kinnans. Sometimes I just read about this stuff, and I just came across it one day, and I just started Googling. And so yeah, that was originally reported that was out there. Like I didn't find that particular thing myself. That was kind of the starting point.
The starting point to it all. Sarah asked, one of our lovely mods, she actually asked, what was the most entertaining, interesting review from the Kinhams?
I'm sure John has his own as well, but the one that comes to mind for me is he went to, I think it was a cafe or something in Dubai, and he starts getting annoyed because one of the waiters keeps calling him balls. But I actually have it open here and he's saying, I did explain I did not like to be called boss. Could you please call me Chris, Mr. Vincent, or Sir? And then he says, the waitress tittered. I thought nothing more of it until we were paying the bill. And she goes, thanks, boss. So like, it's just crazy to think like someone in his position is talking in that way. And yeah, I don't know if you have any, John, as well.
Well, I was actually about to cite that one as well. And the reason why I would cite that one as well is that Christy Kinahan has spent his entire life trying to become the boss. And he is the boss now. And secondly, is that if you have dealt with the Kinahans and covered them and researched their activities, at the time that all of this was going on, the cartel was being held responsible for a feud and murders on the streets of Ireland that have resulted in 18 deaths. And to think that this individual was getting upset over some woman calling him boss while someone was paying for his food, comparing that to the kind of bloodshed that I was seeing on the streets of Dublin and elsewhere as a result of cartel violence was really, really an outer body experience for me, because it really, although these are kind of, you could turn around and sort of describe them as kind of comical interactions, they also provided a bit of an insight into this guy and into his psychology, insofar that, you know, one moment they're involved in the most serious type of offending imaginable that is resulting in people's deaths, never mind the destruction they're wreaking on society through the provision of drugs across Europe and their smuggling network. And then you have them sort of giving out about this. And it also was the ultimate paradox, because Kinahan has spent so much time trying to conceal everything about his own life and his personal life, his character traits, everything else. He's just a very secretive individual. And then yet, he goes on Google Review and posts all of these reviews, and which give away his locations at various times, and all of that. And if I can maybe name check Bo Donnelly and Peter Bart, who are also part of the four-man team that we kind of assembled, like myself and Beau, who used to work with the Sunday Times, but defected to Bellingcat after all of this. We used to wonder, was this actually Kinahan at one stage, or was this some way communicated? Is this some sort of code that they were uploading on Google reviews that people were reading, and there was some hidden meaning behind it or something like that? Because it was so utterly bizarre that someone in this type of involved in this type of activity would be doing this. So it was a really strange experience, all of this, and to kind of look at it and to get a sense of what this guy was like. And indeed, I know a lot of police officers who had spent their careers, or spent most of their careers, hunting the Kinahans, were completely astonished by all of this. They just found it almost impossible to believe that their target number one was so casual about info security.
Yeah, casual is really the word. And I think it's really important that you outlined that, you know, this person is a violent individual and somebody who has wreaked havoc across the globe, really. But some of the reviews, I mean, I think he reviewed some petrol stations, right? It wasn't just high-end restaurants either. He was reviewing everything and anything that came across in his path, which is bizarre and very, very interesting. We've had a question on doing these kinds of investigations, and some of the people in the chat have responded. But Daniela Castro said, do you recommend creating false Facebook or Instagram profiles when looking into people of interest on social media? What kind of protections do you put in place when you're actually looking into these individuals?
Yeah, I definitely recommend that. And on LinkedIn as well, it's important to adjust your privacy settings to make your account private, so you're not giving away your identity when you visit someone's profile. And definitely have it under a pseudonym, although that's harder to do nowadays with their verification. Same with Facebook. But yeah, I would definitely, you try to be invisible as possible when you're doing research, because you don't want to tip people off. So generally, like if I'm looking at a specific website, I try my best not to actually go onto the live website. I'll try and find an archive on the Wayback Machine first, so they're not seeing all these IP addresses. So just like try to be as invisible as possible, create sock puppet accounts. And these are just for research, not for like contacting people or anything like that. But you just want to be kind of invisible when you're doing your research. That's the main thing.
Yeah. Speaking about privacy, has this these two investigations, particularly the one on Strava, made you think a little bit more about what kind of data your apps are sharing? Has it made you a little bit safer when it comes to InfoSec?
Well, if I could answer that question, I met Connor the other day for a cup of coffee. And after that meeting, I spent about 4 hours changing passwords and everything else. And every time I interact with Bellingcat, I leave feeling a little bit more vulnerable because of some of the techniques. And, you know, it's been a kind of a baptism of fire in terms of open source intelligence and how effective it can be. Sorry, I won't speak for Connor, but certainly for myself, it's taught me so much. And indeed, I've learned so much from the team at Bellingcat about info security and tradecraft in terms of conducting online investigations. I was always very good at dealing with people secretly who may be involved in all sorts of activities that they shouldn't be. And I've never, you know, had, you know, governments and stuff have spent a lot of money trying to identify sources of information. But I have been astonished by how much people leak about themselves through the use of social media accounts and phones and emails. And I've learned all of that from Bellingcat, and certain the spirit of Bellingcat, which is to share this type of information and make people aware of it. But it certainly has focused me to an extent that I regularly now would do digital cleansing operations to make sure that I'm just checking myself. And I've done a couple of the courses with Bellingcat, which I'd recommend to anyone. But one of the most scariest things I ever did was actually investigate myself. That was a sobering experience because I would have considered myself secretive. I'm very careful. And I discovered that I'd left gaping, bits of information on the internet about myself, which I had to deal with and that kind of stuff, you know. So, certainly I'll let, maybe let Conor explain a bit more because he's far more qualified than me.
Thanks, John. I would just say, I've always been kind of cautious with what I put online for a number of years. I just think a good attitude to have is with technology nowadays, they try and make it as convenient as possible. But with that convenience, you're often paying a price with privacy. So when you're connecting all your accounts or whatever it is. So what I try and do is I use different email addresses, never reuse the same password. And I only use email addresses for communication. And then I would use a different email address to register for things just so you're not leaving that digital breadcrumb trail. And also obviously with things like Strava, people know that they're posting things, but sometimes I wonder just, do they realize how public those things are? And so it's always good to just sit back and think about your social media and how public it is. Because sometimes you just kind of fall into the idea that it's just your friends and family or something that are seeing this stuff, but often it's not the case. So it's good to have, spend a day or two, maybe having an audit of your social media and seeing what, not just social media, but any kind of online account, seeing what information you're leaving out there, what kind of breadcrumbs you might be leaving, because someday it might come back to haunt you.
Absolutely great advice. And if you want some more tuition or you have been convinced by John that Bellingcat is the place to learn more about InfoSec, you can actually look at our website right now because we actually have some workshops coming up. I linked it in the chat. And Merle has very helpfully linked an overview video as well that's on our YouTube about things to consider to improve your digital safety that's filmed by our very talented investigator, Aganush. And you can watch that now as well. And I'll link then the description of the podcast. And we've had so many questions coming in about what the Kinahan's response has been to the two articles. Have they gone to ground? Is he still posting Google reviews? Have we seen any movement since these two articles have come out?
Maybe if I can answer that, they were delighted with the coverage they got. That's a joke, but they haven't gone to ground. I think what those investigations have done is that they've become a little bit more conscious about what they've been doing. They probably are, would be my understanding, possibly looking at what they've done in the past and trying to figure out, can they cover and conceal some of their online activities? But they are a massive criminal organization. And you must remember, while they look, they kind of look at Bellingcat and the Sunday Times and the sort of reports we publish about them as very much a nuisance. Their biggest problems are police agencies that are trying to extradite them, trying to arrest them, trying to seize their drugs, freeze their money, identify their assets, etc. And that's their real problem at the moment. They don't like this sort of attention. But in the overall scale of things, it's just another headache to a very complex series of headaches they're dealing with at one time. The only thing, though, that I'll say this is that, and I think it's important to remember, is that when investigations like this come out and when they log on the Sunday Times or they log on Bellingcat and they see all of this sort of stuff about themselves and they see, pictures taken in the Cycle Bistro has been uploaded on an Instagram account and Conor just happened to find it. And when they see other information about the reviews and how we've managed to analyze that and look at what's happened, that does weaken them a little bit in the eyes of their associates. Because in that criminal world, in that world of extremists, terrorists, organized crime gangs and spies and intelligence officers and undercover agents, anything that signifies or suggests weakness is a vulnerability, and that can manifest itself in lots of different ways. So it may have, some of their associates might be a little bit wary of them, certainly wary of him being around a phone with them or something like that. They may be looking at this, and I understand that they were kind of very concerned about what else is known that just hasn't entered the public domain yet. So in that respect, an investigation like this has, apart from its the public interest in getting this information out, it does have a kind of practical and knock-on effect on their criminal activities and their money laundering activity. Because it should also be stated that police forces and intelligence services are reading all of these reports, and they're taking information, and it opens up avenues of investigation for them. For example, Oliver Herman, his identity wasn't known to many police forces in Europe, and he wasn't associated with the Kinnan cartel or having any sort of links to Christy Kinnan until we published it. So that opens up all sorts of issues for them as well.
Thanks for that. Connor has actually commented as well. His Google review profile is still live, but no activity since our reporting. Just on Herman, was it more difficult to report on Herman's case because there's an ongoing court case? As mentioned, he's been charged, but not found guilty as of yet. How do you balance the need to reveal information about an individual and potential court proceedings that they might be going through, for example?
Connor, I don't know whether you want me to answer that, but we took a lot of advice on that, and we would have engaged in what I would consider balanced and fair reporting that did not seek to influence any case, so or any that is before any court. And we were quite careful about that. Just for the listeners out there, contempt of court and court proceedings, the reporting on that is quite restricted. You can say certain things and you can't say others. So what we did was we reported as much as we could, we documented as much as we could, and we done that within the confines of what is permissible when an accused person is before a court. So that's what we did. It's really important that newspapers and websites, they would know this, but it's not a free for all. We have to be almost more careful to protect someone's rights that if they're an accused person, than otherwise would be maybe normal. So we're just very, very careful about all of that. And I can say with a degree of confidence that every word that we published about this was scrutinized by ourselves, and we also sought external advice on this. So we did it in a way that was legally permissible as things stand.
Oh yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, I have nothing to add to that.
Fair enough. Okay, so we've got about 5 minutes left. I wanted to ask, and maybe this will be our last question, depends on how quick you answer. What would be your top tips for someone who is embarking on their first investigation into a criminal group? And bearing in mind that, Connor, you shared some amazing tools earlier, what would be your top tips for someone who, perhaps like yourself, has found something and is interested in pursuing it?
Yeah, I would just say, like, first and foremost, to do it responsibly. You know, when you're researching things like this, you quickly start coming across individuals, you know, like companies, and you don't want to be just throwing names out there. So you have to be very careful about that. But yeah, apart from that, like what I did was just follow my curiosity. I just I don't think you need to know all these tools. You don't need to be a huge expert. It definitely helps if you're tech savvy, but I think that, like, you know, if you're able to sign up for an email account, then you have enough technical ability to do a few Google searches. And often it's just a matter of having the creativity to think of things to search. And then, like, you don't need to, like, use fancy Google Docs. Although I think if you learn one thing to do, just use quotes a lot. Use quotation marks around your terms. I basically, all of my searches I do with quotation marks. It's a simple thing, but it just gives you that exact term that you're looking for. So if you're searching for like a house on this street, you have to put that term in quotes to get the result you're looking for. Otherwise, you're just going to get a lot of nonsense. So yeah, that's what that's the main thing I would say is just like follow your curiosity. Like try and think of creative ways. Like don't just, sometimes it's better not to just dive into searching straight away. You might just want to sit back for a while and think about ways to approach it before you start searching, because you can kind of end up going down rabbit holes. But yeah, I think that's the main thing. Just keep it simple and follow your curiosity.
Well, I wouldn't even attempt to advise someone on open source research whilst on the same chat room as Connor, because he really is exceptionally skilled in all of this. But so I would take Connor's advice on that. I mean, the one thing that I've really learned in all of this, and it has been like a stratospheric learning experience for me, who does a kind of different type of work, is that some of this stuff is so simple, it's scary. What Connor is describing is, it's not hugely, and I mean this in the best possible way, it's not hugely sophisticated, but what it is a process of searching for information in a very methodical and thorough way. And that really does work. It really, really does work. It takes time and it takes patience, and it takes a certain kind of mind to look for this information and know about how to go about it. But it really does work. And it's kind of like being a deep dive into this sort of stuff and the open source intelligence and how collection and how it's going. Like it's to me, as someone who has, you know, both studied and has spent a lot of time with intelligence officers, dealing with intelligence services for a long time, and know about the way to collect information. And I often hear people say to me that open source is now becoming this huge, huge thing for them. And I think a number of years ago, people used to dismiss this, but I don't think they dismiss it anymore. I think they kind of know that this is a really, really significant arm now of law enforcement, of defense, of, you know, intelligence collection by governments around the world who are targeting malign actors. If you can get into it, and if you can kind of develop a taste for it or an interest in it, it is phenomenal and what can be achieved. And as Connor very eloquently said there, it can be done if you have the ability to open up an email address and go searching for information, just picking up some of those techniques. You can turn up all sorts of things, because I think what I've really as well learned from all of this is that people overlook things. They would find it difficult to believe that someone like Christy Kinnan, for example, would have a Google review account to be posting information about themselves, because they've spent so long trying to investigate him and he's never made a mistake that would lead to him being sufficiently damaged. And yet Connor comes along and with his laptop and manages to, you know, do what a lot of police forces would have liked to have done, or maybe just didn't do because they never thought about it. So that really is the beauty of Bellingcat, and it's the beauty of open source intelligence. And I think in, you know, many years to come, that news organizations like the Sunday Times or, you know, the BBC already have it, but I think open source intelligence and its collection will be a normal part of any investigation going forward. That's just the way it's going.
John, you've just given us the new Bellingcat advert just there. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody, for coming to the stage talk. It's been amazing to hear about your incredible investigative collaboration, and can't wait to see what you come up with next. We'll all be keeping our eyes out on the Bellingcat and Sunday Times websites. Please check out the links that I've put in the chat for the various tools that Connor mentioned. And this recording will hopefully be up on our podcast platforms by tomorrow, or at least by the end of the weekend. Thank you, everybody, for coming. And come back in 2 weeks' time when we're back with our next Stage Talk. Thank you, John. Thank you, Connor.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, John. All right.
Thank you for listening to the Stage Talk. If you'd like to catch a Stage Talk live where you can ask the guest questions, join the Bellingcat Discord server by visiting www.discord.gg/Bellingcat. The music you've heard is titled Dawn by Newer Self and is courtesy of Artlist.